So the slide tonight, be all that you can be. So like I said this morning, it's a bit cheesy, no? This is a bit cheesy. So, and it's intentionally very, very cheesy. I hope that it's cheesy for you as well. Because it's like a, this is what we find when we podcast motivational speakers. This is what someone sends you on a short clip, unless they send a cat video or a Do It Perfect clip, then they send this. This is the other thing that they send to you. You know, just to be cool, you know? Be the best be that you can be, you know? Go out there. And then in Christian circles, obviously, we take it further. We say, for God's sake, be the best be that you can be. God wants you to be the best be that you can be, you know? Just, isn't it amazing? The next slide, maybe you can just show that. But these are the typical things that our culture calls. Aim higher. Be better. Fulfill your, if you can dream it, you can do it, you know? It's like, chase after your dreams because you deserve it. You deserve to have the best in life. You are so awesome. You are so amazing. There's so much potential in you to be unlocked. You can't remain where you are now. The good life is out there. And nowhere out there somewhere. Good life is there, far, far away, you know? It's like Dar. And the subtlety in all of these communication, there's good in that, no? Don't be mediocre. Don't be lazy. Don't be, just be excellent for God's sake. Be excellent for God's sake. Just be excellent wherever. Whatever you do, do heartily unto the Lord. But this subtle temptation in this is saying to us that the good life is not here, but there. So everything we have now is a preparation for then. So you end up preparing for retirement, and then you have nothing left to do, no? Because the subtleness is that don't expect good year, that don't look for shalom year, don't look for the gold mine year, don't look for the good life year, don't look for God's blessings year, but we should have ambition and good ambition and amazing stuff and dream up and the drive to always get a better job and a higher salary and a better significant other. You know, I always joke about that lottery. I look at young guys and young girls and I'm thinking, you know, you're playing relational. What do we call it? That's that lotto. What's that? Roulette. Yeah, I'm just looking for some sinners who know what I'm talking about. You know, gambling happens to be the new pastor. Anyway, so the roulette thing, you know, it's like, you know, the table's still spinning. You know, maybe I fall on a better number. Maybe fall on a better number. But the point is, we're always going for something. So the subtle temptation is to believe that God's blessings, God's good life, is just beyond our reach. So just chase after the end of the rainbow, which is not a new theology, not a new spirituality. That's truly what we believe. Anyway, so I love this. I love this picture. And what I love about it in that picture and the next slide, if you can just help me there, thanks, is that gravity sucks. I'm looking, there's a cost to this entitlement. This presumptuous, ambitious lifestyle is that at some point you're going to come down. At some point you have to be grounded. At some point you're going to have to live where you are. At some point you're going to have to flourish where you are. At some point you're going to have to come down. And it might be a shock. So my prayer tonight is that it will be gentle. That tonight will be a gentle landing for you. Just at least a consideration that tonight you might consider that all this drivenness in our culture towards the blessings of God, towards the good life, towards something better, towards the place where you will be awesome, with all this drivenness, that you will realize that, as 3,000 years ago, Solomon said, it's a freaking chasing after wind. It's a chasing after the end of the rainbow because you'll never have it. It's like chasing the mirage in the desert. You'll never get the oasis because it's not there. This is the good life. This is sufficient. That right now, God is here, able to bless you where you are. You don't have to move on. Go for the better stuff. Look for a better job. Find something more significant. Hope that perhaps you will be happy there. Because God is able to give you joy and fulfillment and prosper right here. And this is the hope of tonight. So we're going to read a psalm, and every time I say this, 3,000-year-old psalm. Just say that to yourself softly a few times, ne? 3,000 jaar gelede. So, and I want you to see, maybe not yourself, because you're amazing, but your neighbor, the sinner that you brought to church tonight, ne? Or maybe that guy that didn't come to church and you're going to send him this link afterwards. Yeah? Then maybe you'll realize that humanity has really not changed in 3,000 years. That's why the Psalms speak to so loudly to us. So let's read it together. So Father, as we read your word, I know that your spirit is here, able to speak to us. Will you enlighten us? Will you break it up? Will you make it very personal? God, will you move from our heads to our hearts tonight? Will you speak to us? Will you encourage us? Will you inspire us with a godly ambition? In Jesus' name, amen. So David's short psalm, short prayer. This is one of four prayers in the Bible that only have three verses. So by the end of this evening, you would have memorized a chapter in the Bible. Amazing, amazing. Yeah? This is the, I think it's the 11th of the, or the 12th of the Bedevaart Songs of Ascent, that Israelites sang at least once a year, but three times a year, the Jews would sing this over and over and over. And what's amazing about this is a prayer of David. So it's David's personal prayer, which he intentionally transcribed to a song of teaching, saying, maybe this is not just useful for me. Maybe this is something that everyone should learn. And tonight, we're singing of David. And David was a man after God's own heart, so I think this is a good prayer for you to memorize. O Lord, my heart is not lifted up. My eyes are not raised too high. I don't occupy myself with things too great or too marvelous for me. But I have calmed and quieted my soul. Like a weaned child is my soul within me. Like a weaned child is my soul within me. O Israel, hope in the Lord from this time forth and forevermore. I'm going to read it again. Don't you want to read it with me? It's prayers, the Psalms in the Bible are not meant to be studied as much as it's meant to be prayed. So you can pray this one with me. Say, Lord, my heart is not lifted up. My eyes are not raised too high. I don't occupy myself with things too great and too marvelous for me. But I have calmed and quieted my soul like a weaned child with its mother. Like a weaned child is my soul within me. O Israel, hope in the Lord from this time forth and forevermore. It's amazing. In reading this psalm, I wonder if you have the same sensation as I have. You read this and you go like, I don't occupy myself with things too great or too marvelous for me. My heart is not lifted up. My heart, my eyes are not lifted. I'm going like, I have calmed and quieted my soul. I'm like, this is sometimes true for me. Sometimes there are those times when this is true for me. I wish it was all the time, but this is not all the time. And obviously, this is David. And this is obviously later on in David's life, because we know there was a time in David's life where David was really, really ambitious. Eventually, at some point, being the king, being the main man in Israel, it's clear that in his early days, after killing Goliath, or when he was anointed as king, there was no arrogance or pride. It seems as though the Bible story is very clear that David was not perfect. Very clear. I mean, it takes time, and the big chapters are the chapters where it expounds his sin and his failure and his judgment. Yeah? So the smaller chapters, but you can see that when David was anointed as king of Israel, when he was a young boy, a ruddy boy, doesn't seem to be pride there. He was happy to be with the sheep. He was forgotten and pushed away by the family. So that later on when he brought his brother stuff, it was constantly enmity. They were jealous of him, but he didn't seem to be arrogant. He was, and when he went out on the battlefield to kill Goliath, when he went to King Saul and said, Yelis Amalbang, give me that sword, give me something, or just give me, I'll go and slay this. Who is this guy scheming about my God? I'll chop off his head. It's clear that there was no ounce of arrogance or pride there. It was just a sense of duty and honor, eh? Courage, duty, honor, because this is about God. And later when the girls started singing in the streets about him, you know, he had his groupies everywhere in fame pages, you know, at the wells, and the ladies were talking about, ooh, David, did you see this old fashion in this magazine? It was amazing. And But it didn't seem as though it touched him as much as it just spurred jealousy in Saul. He was in Saul's court. Saul became jealous of him, chased him. Saul wanted to kill him because the rumor was that David was planning an insurrection to topple the kingdom. But it's clear that it wasn't David's intention there. But there was a time when David became arrogant, when David started counting a census in the country. And he also wanted to count. He wanted to see, how big is my kingdom now? You know, it's like, can't touch this, dad. And he was looking at how big he became. Even so that, and we don't really get this culturally, but he even wanted to count the Levites, the tribe where God says, this is my people. Levites are my people, given to bless Israel and to serve me. You don't touch my people. And it's just so clear that definitely David became proud because he also wanted to bounce the numbers, you know, enlarge the size of my kingdom, you know. And God judged him severely for it. There was a time, obviously, in his life where David's eyes were roaming, and he was ambitious as well when he had his two wives. And then he decided, watching porn from the roof, looking at the ladies' bath, and he goes like, I want that one. And he stepped over. He was ambitious. He wanted to take something which was not given to him, someone who wasn't given to him, and there was sin in his heart. So it's clear that this wasn't David in his earlier days, but this was David in his latter days. And I love the fact that he learned to quiet his soul. It was a learning to quiet his soul. So if you say that you read this and it's times of it seems true and sometimes it doesn't seem true for you, the invitation is a learning. But look at this. Look at this anti-psalm by David Paulson, another Paul's David. He just said, listen, so if you want to get our culture, this is our culture. Self, my heart is proud. I'm absorbed in myself. And my eyes are haughty. I like looking down on others. And I chase after things too great and too difficult for me. I constantly do that. So, of course, because of this, I'm noisy and restless on the inside. And it comes naturally, like a hungry infant fussing in its mother's lap. Like a hungry infant, I'm restless with my demands and my worries. I want it all and I want it now. So I scatter my hopes onto anything and anybody all the time, hoping that someone can fulfill my desires. I think when we read this, if it's not true for you, this is for that friend that you want to send the WhatsApp to, the link to afterwards. This is our culture. This is human nature. The fact that we, since the Garden of Eden, since the time when our first mother and father in the garden did what God said you shouldn't do, you can have anything you want, but you don't touch the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And they decided, stuff this. I'm going to have what I want when I want it. I want to decide what's good for Ross. I want to decide what's good for Adam. Why should God decide what's good for me? I have enough brains to steward this package of mine so I can have a flourishing life. I know what the good life is. I will chase after it. And since the moment they stretched out that hand and they ate of that fruit, from that moment onwards, humanity is the state in which we are. We constantly want to be haughty, to assume the right and the power to know what's good for me. I will steer my own life. I will have what I want whenever I want to. And it's always been that way. And from that moment onwards, we're always chasing after what we deem good for the moment, ignoring the limitations and the boundaries that God has placed on me. Our culture does not like limitations. Our culture doesn't like. I mean, it's not true just for our culture. Just think about you and your diet plan. Just think about that. Die man weet nie waarvan ek praat nie. But anyway, just think about, you know that you shouldn't have one more. But you have one more. Whether it's cake, coffee, a cigarette, or whiskey. You know, you're going to have one more because you feel like it in the moment. We believe that if I have that, my life will be better. My life will be better. And we know the results is, die volgende oggend of die volgende week, when you get on the scale or when you look in the mirror, it's not that good, né? Okay, so I'm talking hypothetically now. So let me go back to the psalm, and I'm just going to slowly speak through it, and then we'll look, as we always do, how is this text a mirror to me and to my society? How is this text a window into God's kingdom? How is this text a door? Invitation for me to respond to God. Okay, so I always hated this when I was sitting on that side. But don't you just want to touch the person next to you and just say, we're going somewhere tonight. Focus, focus. Okay. So David says, oh Yahweh, and when we read capital letters, I think you know this, but he's, the Hebrew word here is Yahweh, the covenant name of God, the God who always is, the ever-existing, self-sufficient God. But David is talking to his covenant God, to the God that has been there for Israel always, to the God who has bound himself to Israel and to David, the king. He bound himself to him, and he's counting on this, he's talking to this relational God, this God of covenant, and he's saying, God, my heart is not lifted up. It's not proud, Cape Town. My heart is not entitled, God. I don't presume a right or a worth more than I should. I don't think of myself too highly, God. I don't. There was a time when I did, but I don't anymore. I don't. I have cultivated and calmed. I've composed my soul. God, my heart is not too proud, too exalted, too lifted up. It isn't, God. And because of there's not pride in my heart, God, I also want to say that my eyes are not raised to my neighbors too much. There's not arrogance. Arrogance is the presumption that I'm better than other people. Imagine this. Because even people with a low self-esteem, I want to say, also people with a low self-esteem struggle with arrogance. Because even if you don't think that you're better, we like spotting where people fail, spotting their flaws. It's amazing. I wonder if we, probably not tonight, but maybe in another night when we were worshiping, I wonder if everyone is, maybe it's just me, but there were times in my life I would sit in the crowd and would so enjoy the worship, and I also like playing guitar, and I was thinking, it's like having a worship off with God. Anyway, but worship, yeah? And then I would imagine just how awesome I would be leading the worship. And so that people will go like, whoa, dude, you're anointed. It's amazing. Wow, just check that guy's gift. And I wonder, I obviously know that I'm not the only person who thinks like that. Maybe you have no ambition for worship, but you're looking at me sometimes preaching and you go like, "Hey, if I had that mic tonight, the power of God would drop. Poof. I would open up the scriptures and expound wisdom, for ancient wisdom, and people will go, wow, awesome, give that man a mic, you know, and they would invite me to preach on TV, and they would write books, because I am so awesome, you know? It is universal. It is universal. Maybe it's not this. Maybe you're watching rugby and you go like, man, if I wasn't stuck behind this desk as an accountant, I tell you, the Old Blacks, Axel Fale, tackle puppy, that's all next word, obviously. Or spot yourself running, or writing music, or you'd sing in the shower and you go like, man, if someone could just see, not see me, but hear me now, you know, it's like, it would be amazing. I would be famous. You know, Simon would press that golden buzzer and we have, it's human nature. We are born with a desire. That's what the 2,000-year-old document of John writes to us. Lust of the eyes, lust of the flesh, pride of life. We long, we are proud. And our pride sometimes, even if we don't think that we are better at this, we think at least we know how to do it better. Critical to others. And then David says this third one, and I love this. So, entitlement, arrogance. And the third one, David says, I don't occupy myself with things too great and too marvelous for me. And this branches out in two areas. The first one, it branches out into the idea that the idea of being occupied and concerned and angry, this leads to anger and anxiety. Anger, anxiety, and self-absorption. The idea that we get occupied with things that over which we have no control. It's amazing to me if I, and I'm not judging you, yeah, because I don't think myself better than you, really, not in this one. But I wonder, you know, how people get absolutely worked up about the American election. And I'm like, why? I think closer to home we have also a circus. It's like, well, why are you so obsessed? You know, but people live, and I think if there's one thing that has changed in 3,000 years, is this little window, this channel, this pipeline for all news and informations and funny, weird, absolutely useless information on TikTok that you can get, that it distracts you. And what does it do? It distracts you. It occupies your mind. It tags your emotions to get anxious or absorbed or angry about things you have no control over and doesn't do anything about you. All it does, it takes you away from the here and the now. It removes us from being present to where God does bless. God cannot bless you where you are not. There's no space where God can bless you where you're not. The blessings of God is not there. The God of blessing is always here. He's Emmanuel. He's here. He blesses here. So when we get absorbed or anxious or angry about things we have no control over, David says, man, you know why I have a calm and quiet soul? It's because I've been weaned from these distractions, which move me away from where God actually is, where the good life actually is, that the good life is here, not there. And the second thing is not just to be worked up about stuff, but also the daydreams, the flights of fantasy, which I painted a little bit earlier. You know, you being this professor in Norway about salmon hunting. It's belachelijk. Maybe it's your word of knowledge somewhere. It's a crappy. But, you know, you've got these ideas about me going to be this amazing, famous stuff. Famous person. The significant, awesome person. Let me tell you a story. No, it's not my story to tell. So, sorry. I just did the worst thing to you that I could. But I'm not going to. It's not my story to tell. I'll invite Doc Fani to tell the story himself one day about his pursuit of purpose in life and where he found the blessing of God. He thought he's going to be this amazing professor in Europe that teaches the world. And he was that literally, and he did a postdoc there, and he was amazing. But eventually, in Jan Kriel School, for 18 years, he lived up his purpose with kids that no one bothers to spend time with. And he found the blessing of God and the favor of God in his life like never before. A full, full life of rich blessings. Just an amazing story. But anyway, the marvelous to me, so living in fantasies and in dreams, thinking that God will bless me when I find that job, or when I reach that qualification, or when I reach those things. It's not wrong to pursue a career. But the constant chasing and jumping from job to job and place to place in the hope that one day, the constant working so hard so that one day I can have a good life. The chasing of the rainbow, that's what David is writing about here, but his son wrote, Solomon, saying, it's a chasing after wind, dude. There's no blessing there. There's no greater blessing than we have now. And then David says, but this one thing. He says, but surely. The translation doesn't have it yet, but it says surely. He's saying, you can test me on this, dude. You can test me on this. Check it out. He's saying, I have calmed, I've composed, and stilled, quieted my soul. Like a weaned child with his mother, like a weaned child's my soul within me. And this metaphor of the, some of you don't know what, young men don't know what a weaned child is, but you're a weaned child, I hope so. Well, some men never get off the bottle, but you know, it's like they grow up with the bottle. It's grappy, anyway. The point is, being weaned is the process of teaching a baby that it's now no longer time for you to be fed on demand on the breast, but we'll give you meals. So it's the first terrible thing that most healthy children go through. The first troubling thing. This moeilijk, this ongemakkelijk, you don't like it. Because the baby is used to cry, and mommy picks him up, her up, puts her on the breast. It's comfort, it's warmth, it's affection, it's security, it's food, it's good. She's happy. Stomach full, happy, fall asleep right there. It's amazing. But then there comes a time when the good mom knows that this is not a time for you to be on the breast anymore. You got to learn. You got to grow up. You need something else. So because of that, I'm going to deny you what you demand. I'm going to deny you what you are used to getting. I'm going to deny you what you feel entitled to get. And what was proper, but it's not proper anymore. So I'm going to say no to you. And you're going to be angry. And you're going to be anxious. And you're going to worry. You're going to think, does mom not love me anymore? Why are you so rude? But the child will soon figure out that, wow, pumpkin is amazing. Millie's is flippin' lekker. A sticky biltong is beautiful. And a sticky steak is beautiful. And it's better than mom's milk. There will never be a time when a healthy person will go back to breast milk. There will never be a time, because this is awkward, né? But this is so much better. This is so much better. So the point is, for that season, the 2 weeks, 3 weeks, depending on the will of a child, this child will feel anxious and angry. But David is saying, yeah, there was a time when I was weaning, but now I'm weaned. There was a time when I was constantly demanding, longing for, where I was angry and anxious or absorbed because of what I'm not getting, what I feel I should get and what I feel entitled to get, and that's not there anymore. And he's saying, I have learned to calm and quiet myself. And you want to go like, David, how? So the metaphor obviously speaks to it. The metaphor is the communication that we want to get here. It's like the security of a good parent who loves you, who cares for you, who is yours. It's a personal connection. It's not a child. It's your mother. It's a bond. And this person has the good, best interest for you. And the invitation is to trust the benevolent character of this loving kindness mother. This chesed mother, this good chesed is the Hebrew word for loving kindness, goodness, mercy. You know, just everything that is good, proper, right, just. Saying, this is the trusting. And David is saying, it brings a peace to my soul. I'm not anxious. I'm not worried. I'm stilled. I'm not in turmoil anymore. I'm at peace now. And then, so the first bit is the goal. What is this life? What is this way of living? What is this way of living that we should grow into? And it's the picture of not being arrogant, not being proud, not being entitled, not being arrogant, and then not being distracted by things, not living in a dreamland or in anxiety, in a world where you have no power or control over, but to live right here, at peace where I am now. That this is good. Where I am is good. That's the invitation. And then how? How did you do this? And he's saying, well, I've calmed and quieted my soul with this metaphor that God is good, that God loves me. And although I have desires that feels unmet, although I feel entitled to get stuff, I've calmed and quieted my soul with the reality that there is a good mom who loves me. There is a good God who loves me, who cares for me. This is one of three instances in the Bible where the picture is clearly God like a mother, more than a father, because the metaphor doesn't work with a dad. No, doesn't. Yeah, it's funny. It's awkward. And then he's saying, yeah, thirdly, the invitation for us, the reason is, why can I be calmed? As, O Israel, I love this. O Israel, hope in the Lord from this time forward and forevermore. And I love what he does here. This is David writing, and he's saying that Yahweh, Lord there, has a covenantal relationship with Israel. This good, godly parent, God has bound himself to Israel for good forever. He's good. And he's bound himself for your good. And I love this invitation, because sometimes when you read this, if that last verse wasn't there, it's implied in the rest, but it's not there. We might think that we should have no expectation of good, no dreams, no desires. We should kill those things. But it's not there. Because here it says, hope, expect the good. Expect your good. Expect good from the Lord now and forevermore. Because he is your covenant God who has bound himself to your good. Expect good from Yahweh. You can, you should, because this is his covenantal relationship. I mean, the quote, the verse that we always quote there is the one from Jeremiah 11:29, where it says, I've got plans for you, plans to prosper you, for hope and a future. You can bank on the reality that God has got good for you. God has got good intentions for you because his nature is good, but he's got good plans for you. It's like really good ideas for you, good things, good works that he's prepared that you should walk in, Ephesians says. But I love it. That was written and spoken to Israel by Jeremiah as they were about to go into exile. Military siege, warfare, ripped from your parents, ripped from your country, your Daniel and his friends, your Ezekiel and his friends, and you're ripped from all your people, Nehemiah, everyone, and you land in a squatter camp in Babylon. And you go, what is happening? What is happening? And he says, God's got good plans for you. Cheer up. Plans to prosper, plans for hope and a future. Israel, you're being weaned. You're being weaned from what you know now. But I've got good for you. And the good is for my kingdom purposes and for you, Daniel, and for you, Micha, Abednego. So I just know it in Afrikaans. Sadrach, Mesach, and Abednego. So I've got good plans for you, now and forevermore. God calls you by name. You are chosen. You are his. You're secure. He's got a covenantal relationship with you. The good covenant God of Israel loves his people. And there's an expectation for good now and forever. And I love that. I love that it puts it like that. Because all your translations will say, from this time forth and forever, now and always. So hear this. Not just good hope for God for the good then, but intentionally it says now. Now. The good life is now. Shalom is here now. You don't have to get another job, another application. You don't have to change stuff. God is good to you right now. The blessings of the Lord is here. I see that I'm moving on quickly now. I just love this picture. So I put a scripture to it. It says, Romans 12, don't think of yourself more highly as you ought. Even though your dad said to you, you're my angel always, it really means fallen angel, loved by God. Slechte grappie. Okay, so how is this text a mirror to our society? How is this text a mirror to you and me? How do you see, read this text? And I think we did say it already, but let's just say it. Let's just acknowledge that inside of me, as David, the man after God's own heart, inside of me, there's pride. That I really believe that I'm awesome, that I'm amazing. I really believe, and I know that I am awesome and loved by God, but I and my wife and my kids and my close friends know that I'm very fallible. They know. The longer you know me, the more you know, ek is a gevalle mens. Ek is a sondaar. I mess up. I hurt. I get angry. I get frustrated. I lose my cool. I am a failure. I'm a sinful person. That if you could see the desires and the dreams that I sometimes flash in my head, I go like, whoa, that's not the type of stuff I would like to preach about. Because this is a fallen person. I am fallible like David. So to be honest with myself that I am a man in need of God's grace is so good. Yes, I'm loved by God. Yes, I'm amazing. Yes, God believes in me. I mean, the picture that I had of Jesus earlier was just the Lord standing with me, his right hand on me as I preach here. So Jesus is really here. He loves me and he approves of me. And if Satan would come to him and say, like he did for Job, I always begin off, and he'd say, hey, you don't touch my boy. He's amazing. You can't touch this. Da-da-da-da. Yes, it's like. But I am proud, entitled at times. I think I deserve stuff. Have you ever thought it? Like, I deserve better than this. Like, I'm not going to put up with this. No one does this to me. I deserve better. I'm out of here. So maybe not you, but your friend that you should send the link to. Arrogant. You think yourself superior. Our culture. Selfish ambition. We are driven. We are driven. We are driven. We are driven to a better life, to better stuff, because we think that we should deserve more and work more. And if I get a better salary and I get a better job and I get a better boyfriend, then my life will just be amazing. You know, like really, we really believe that. I really want you to get married. So many Disney is fought me that knee. Anyway, anxious. It leaves us anxious, angry, and absorbed. I mentioned that earlier. Anxious because we feel, this is what I want to say. Our parents grew up with not many choices, right? not your parents, my parents, previous generation, eh? Grew up with not many choices. You got a job at the post office, and you would probably live in that job for 40 years. Get a gold watch, they greet, and you get retired. That's your option. And you were fine with that. They were fine with that because they believed that this is a good life. I have a job. I have a stable income. I've got good stuff. I'm going to live here. And it's amazing. Yes, everything at the post office isn't right. It's not good. But it's fine. This is my job, and I'm living here right now. And then, you know, same with Volkskas Bank, Absa Bank. You know, you would live there forever, or PSG or Sanlam or any of those stuff. You work at Waterwese. Because they believe that this is good. We grow up with the idea that there's amazing stuff out there, that the world is your oyster, that if you can dream it, you can do it. But the problem with that is that if you are the one who is responsible for your joy because of your decisions, oh, you're going to struggle with anxiety. And do we find a culture struggling with anxiety? We do. Because I am responsible for my joy. So baie verantwoordelikheid. There's so much pressure on me. So anyway, so anxiety. So calm and quiet your soul. Angry because people are in absorbed self. And the last one, culture struggles with desperation, with depression, and despondency, hopelessness. This is our culture. This is who we live in. So the text speak to us. So what is God's kingdom for me? How can I see something of God, God's design for me, for us? Then I love you, because this text is all that. This is what David wanted to teach the Israelites, who sang all their way to Jerusalem every single year. Sing the song over and over and over. Lord, my heart is not haughty, my eyes not lofty, nor would I consider myself with things too wonderful. I've calmed and quieted my soul. And we can see in this text is that David really had it. He really lived in peace. He really became peaceful. He had a peace deep on the inside, a confident expectation of God's good, regardless of his circumstance. And we can know that David didn't have an easy life. I mean, Solomon wanted to kill him. The Philistines wanted to kill him, not just Goliath, but the Philistines later on. And even Absalom, his own son, wanted to kill him, hunted him. Big things in his life. He had big turmoil in his life. He did not have an easy life. And yet David would sit outside Jerusalem and pray as a deer, and the next song he prays, Lord, my eyes are not haughty. I'm not entitled. I'm not better than my son. I've calmed and quieted my soul. I don't live in a dreamland somewhere where I can't live. I've calmed and quieted. David really humble, content, composed, and hopeful. This is something which you really owned. And if there's one thing you can read in this psalm over and over, it's this, that there is a peaceful way of living. And this is the point of the psalm. And the second thing that we can see here is that David learned it. I mentioned it two or three times, but this is something that he cultivated. He didn't come to the front in a charismatic church and Helmut walked up to him and went, Shandai, Shandai, poof, be at peace. And it happened. In a night, an angel came to him and he was at peace for the rest of life. No, David's saying, no, it doesn't work like that. God is saying, no, it doesn't work like that. God is saying it's something you cultivate. There is a peace that you cultivate that drives out anxiety. There is a peace, there is a lifestyle, there are disciplined ways of approaching anxiety and crisis that cultivates a peace in your head and a peace in your heart, a confidence and a hopefulness of expecting the good regardless of what you go through. And I love that it's David, because we know that David's life was not an easy life. Jesus said exactly the same. This could be Jesus' psalm, eh? Jesus, it's amazing that Jesus prayed the psalm for all 12 to 33, for all those years, 12 to 36, all those years that he lived on earth, 33, he prayed the psalm over and over on the way to Jerusalem like everyone else, saying, Father, Lord, my heart is not haughty, my eyes not lofty, nor do I consider myself to. I've calmed and quieted my soul, because Jesus had a chill life, had to do this, so that the night before his arrest, he would sit. And all the three times that people wanted to kill him, John 5, 8, and 10. But the night before his arrest, he had to calm and quiet his soul like a weaned child with his mother, knowing that the Lord, O Israel, O Jesus, hope in the Lord from this time forth forevermore. And then he went to be arrested. It's amazing. He really had this. But Jesus, the one who said to us, listen, guys, I can see that you're struggling with anxiety on earth here. So come to me, everyone who is weary, take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you something. You've got to learn this. You've got to learn this. This is not something that cognitive. This is a lifestyle. Find rhythms of grace. The Message translation, he says, I am humble, I'm gentle at heart. So Jesus says, there are two things you should learn from me, which is exactly what David says in the psalm. You've got to cultivate humility and meekness, self-restraint, self-control, to not constantly live, give up to your urges, but just say no. Soul, you don't need this. Exactly, weaning your soul. He's saying you find rest for your soul, but it's a weaning of the soul. The baby who wants to scream and fight because it doesn't get everything it wants now. Jesus is saying, we are like that. Our souls are like that. When we don't get everything we get, my sister-in-law always says to her three kids, when they get something and they don't get the same because there are three kids and they don't always get the same. And she says, well, the world is not fair. Deal with this. You know, it's like, but she's not a bad mother. She's just teaching them to like, nee, can he else grab it? And then she says to them when they get angry, she says, just stamp your feet and say, you get what you get and you don't get upset. So the weaning baby has to say to itself, it's kicking and screaming on mom's lap because she just wants the breast now, and saying, no, you get what you get and you don't get upset. Self-restraint. Calm. Compose your soul. Mom knows what's best for me. Mom has always been good to me. Mom loves me. Mom cares for me. See, I'm in mom's arms. She won't let me die of thirst. She won't let me die of hunger. She knows me. She cares for me. Same thing. It's amazing to know that Jesus' temptation in the wilderness were these three things, no? Come on, Jesus. You can make yourself some bread. Yeah, you're hungry. You've been fasting for 40 years. In fact, 1,000 years ago, right here in this, 1,400 years, sorry, right here in this desert, you made bread for Moses and the guys. Why don't you just make bread for yourself now? Let manna rain down. Come on, do it. Feed yourself. And then Jesus is saying, nah, Dad knows I'm hungry. Dad knows I'm hungry. Dad knows I'm okay. Dad trusts me. Dad won't let me die. My father knows my needs. Man shall not live by bread alone, by that which I make, but that which comes from the mouth of God. God will give me what I need. I trust in God. Our culture is not good with that. Our culture is good with man. If you have a desire or dream, then either through charismatic prayer or through force or through some connection, scheme to get what you want when you want it. Yeah? Maybe your friends, not you. But our culture is good with that. Our culture is good to satisfy our desires because we get taught the whole time that it's your right, you deserve to get what you want. We've been fed this the whole time. And this psalm says, learn from me. If you want a peaceful soul, if you want to live in confident, quiet trust, learn humility, the secret of being content with what you have. Learn meekness, to not use your force just because you can to get what you want, but to wait that God gives it to you. It's amazing, eh? I see that this is not one of, you know, get those sermons where we preach and everyone goes like, yeah, this is not one of those. Anyway, at the end you'll go, yeah. Okay, good. Last bit. How, I was reading the psalm and was talking about it. Let me just say this. Tian was saying to me as we were driving, he's saying that our culture constantly throws this, the devil in our culture. The subtle idea that I'm not where I am supposed to be with my career. I'm behind. See, all my friends are there. See, they've got it together and I don't have it together yet. See, she's got three children yet and you know. This guy drives that car and I mean, I can't even afford my little thingy. You know, we're behind this. The temptation to believe that we are not where we're supposed to be because everyone else. I mean, look at that family on Facebook. They're always smiling. I know we're fighting in our family, but that family is much better than ours. See, they are better off than me. I'm behind, you know. I don't have it all. And there's this drivenness to try and keep up with some vague idea that someone puts a Facebook picture up and we believe that everyone else is better in life than we are. We are really driven by this. And the idea is, this is our culture, ambition. We have to go there. We've got a drivenness to go there. So the invitation is to calm and quiet our soul and with the last text. And I mentioned this earlier, but let me just put up the slide. How do we calm and quiet our soul? This is the answer. We calm and quiet our soul in the knowledge, and not the knowledge, the habitual confession that the Lord, my covenant God, God who has bound himself to you in Jesus, you are bought with a price, you are his. You've been chosen by God. You are called by God. You are set aside by God. You are being steered by your shepherd all your life. You are being steered. The role of the shepherd, the role of your covenant God, the role of the shepherd, it's not the sheep's responsibility to keep on track. It's the shepherd's responsibility to keep the sheep on track. We can run away, but if you run away, I want to tell you that the great shepherd will find you. And will bring you home. And will care for you. Because he has to give an account to the Father for your soul. Jy moet nie so stres dat jy het gaan mis in die lewe nie. There's a good shepherd who is held accountable for you. He has shed his blood. He's bought you to the Father. You are his. He knows you by name. You are precious in his sight. He has you in his hands. First one, your name. Secondly, confident expectation. He will do you good. He is good. He will do you good. The temptation in the world is you can have a better life outside of God's will. When you choose yourself, Adam's temptation, the lie that the serpent told Adam in the beginning, you can have a better life if you decide what's good. I will tell you, outside of God's will, you will live in anxiety, in restlessness, in anguish, and in drivenness your whole life. Self-absorbed. Because then you have to make it all by yourself. David said, at the end of my life, I've learned to calm and quiet my soul because God has good things for me. He knows me by name and he's bound himself to me forever. It's the same thing the Lord is saying to you. So I want to invite you now. I'm going to read the psalm one more time. I'm going to ask if someone at the back near me, if you can just, Bradley, just dim the lights. And then we're going to sing a song. And you can come on like a, Simon, you come on like a volume druk op hierdie ene, né? It's like a, we're going to sing the song together. It is one of those many worship songs that is a way to calm and quiet our souls because of the words that we sing to ourselves and into our situation. Amen. Lord, my heart is not lifted up, nor my eyes raised too high above others. I do not occupy myself with things too great and too marvelous for me. Therefore, in this way, I've calmed and quieted my soul like a weaned child with his mother, like a weaned child is my soul within me. O Israel, O Shofar Durbanville, hope in the Lord from this time forth and forevermore. Let's sing this song together.